is Davin's Den. Is Davin's Den.
Alrighty, we are back. So like I said, holograms are actually touring now. So it's probably a lot more involved than any of us knew, so I'll go through it and then we can discuss it. We'd actually go see a hologram in concert.
Yeah, okay.
I see Jem in the holograms.
Jem in the holograms?
You don't remember Jem in the holograms?
No.
After your
Jem
time.
In the holograms?
Yeah, it was a cartoon.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, we olds don't know that one.
It was a cartoon growing
I think
up.
It was a vaudeville act.
They made it a movie a couple of years ago.
Oh.
I'm sure they cleared the mantle for the Academy Awards.
You're very judgmental of the arts.
The only guy that rented it. That's why he's pissed.
Rented it? Where'd you go, Blockbuster, stupid? All right, so Coachella 2012 set the internet ablaze with the Snoop Dogg, closed out his headlining set by bringing out a hologram of the rapper Tupac Shakur. People thought it was either creepy or astonishing, but all entertainment veteran Martin Tudor could think was, now what? So, which is what most people would do.
Sure.
They did two songs and that's it, says Tudor, whose extensive career has spanned doing lighting design for Broadway shows to running a talent management group and record label. So he wanted to see a show. He wanted to take it to the next level. What people saw on stage 7 years ago has actually been around for much longer. It wasn't even a hologram. I didn't even know that. Tupac's performance was created by AV Concepts using CGI and the fundamentals of a 19th century illusion called Pepper's Ghost.
Oh.
Madonna and the Gorillaz used it at the 2006 Grammys, as did Al Gore. Hey, we mentioned him.
Yeah.
In 2007 to kick off Tokyo's live Earth Benefit concert, to which Joe believes never happened. He's a concert denier, that Joe Curry.
I love that.
However, what Tudor saw wasn't just some one-off gimmick. He believed there was potential to tap into something deeper with audiences and develop a sustainable business model. He figures people want to see the nostalgia. He thought it was pretty cool to be able to see that people would want to see people they never saw in real life. So in January 2018, Tudor, along with former Clear Channel CEO Brian Becker, announced the launch of Base Hologram, a production company for holographic performances. Although there are competitors in the space like iLlusion and Hologram USA, Base has pulled away from the pack in securing the rights to top-tier acts including Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly, and opera diva Maria Callas. Last month, the company announced its biggest get-to-date with a Whitney Houston tour set for early 2020. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But look at you. You stopped what you were doing. You stopped pinching your neck flap. She's done grooming herself over there. She stopped mid-groom. like an orangutan.
What? nitpick, what?
Tudor and Becker are tapping into a booming demand for live experiences that has helped the top 100 concert tours alone grow to more than $65 billion globally, according to Pollster. In addition, the nostalgia market shows no signs of abating, because four of the top 10 tours in 2018 were the Eagles, Roger Waters, U2, and the Rolling Stones. One of the main factors behind Base's early success is its technology. A significant upgrade from Tupac's Coachella cameo was, while also being nimble enough to allow for a relatively aggressive touring schedule. However, even with the sharper graphics and the stamp of legitimacy that a tour like Houston's may confer, Base still faces meaningful challenges. It not only has to prove that this technology can help establish a new type of live entertainment, but it also has to do so amid ethical questions that surround holographic performances of deceased celebrities. I look forward to the Race Odyssey hologram tour. Pepper. Oh, Joe didn't get. Joe got kicked out of that one too. There's a hologram playing Joe.
Well, Race Odyssey. No, I didn't get kicked out.
I know, but if you guys came back, you would.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, probably would.
The hologram would get kicked out.
The hologram would get kicked out. Joe's asking for too much money.
Hologram Joe.
Hologram Joe. He's going with hologram of Clinton.
Now I got kicked out. Yeah.
And stay out.
But you know what? That's a badge of honor, getting kicked out of there.
Yeah, really.
Now it is.
War stories.
Yeah.
So Pepper's Ghost was popularized by British scientist John Henry Pepper, who debuted his version in an 1862 stage production of Charles Dickens' The Haunted Man and The Ghost's Bargain. The basic mechanics involve reflected image giving the illusion of someone or something in its physical form. Who knew this shit was around for so long?
Wow, yeah.
For Tupac at Coachella, a live actor was made to look like Tupac using CGI. That performance was then projected downward on a reflective surface, which bounced the moving image onto a tightly pulled transparent foil screen.
Real? Oh, okay. You know what? This sounds like Scooby-Doo level mechanics.
That was a little Nixon-ish, too.
And I would have got away with it all, except if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
It's an effective illusion, but not efficient for a touring schedule. There's a lot of tension on the screen, like 1,200 pounds per inch kind of tension. So you have to set up an enormous structure around that to be able to deal with the tension on the screen. To do a full stage size screen is doable. It's just a big undertaking. And Bass also records live actors with CGI mapping to create its stories. They do that with video games, too.
Yeah.
The seminal development that has allowed Tudor to go beyond the legacy tech is when he found a company in the UK that develops a proprietary mesh screen that makes setting up and breaking down set much faster. What's also elevating Bass's production is an Epson projector capable of producing 25,000 lumens of light. A standard 60-watt bulb produces 800 lumens. So that gives it a basis.
Okay.
Instead of Pepper's Ghost technique, Bass projects directly onto the screen. The technology has limitations. There's no way to project a volumetric image, which would represent a character in three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So certain venue seats can't be sold because of the angle. So besides not being able to sell behind the stage, you probably couldn't sell the wings, the left and the right of the stage.
That's kind of like those really big televisions when they first came out.
Yeah, yeah.
That on the, if you looked at it from a certain angle, you couldn't see what was on the screen.
Yeah, it sounds similar to that.
Yeah.
So that would be a drawback. However, none of the above stopped Bass from producing more than 40 shows across U.S., South America, Mexico, and Europe in 2018. Working with technology that makes that kind of touring possible, the focus was then placed on creating and engaging full-length production. Bass's parent company, Bass Entertainment, has 35 years of experience producing live shows and Vegas-style stuff. All right, right now they're doing Magic Mike. So they've done Magic Mike Live. Let's see. So, but they're essentially a 2D performance.
Yeah.
But one of the main draws for a live concert is just that it's live. Whether or not an artist is actually singing or using pre-recorded vocals, you at least get to see them in person.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. He incorporates live elements in his production. For example, Maria Callas tours with a 50-piece orchestra. So your lead is the quote-unquote hologram.
Right.
But there are live elements there. Becker and Tudor are hoping to reframe the live experience in this particular context as something of a hybrid between a film and a theater production.
Right.
It's a fully produced scripted show. We're not replicating concert. We're creating a concert experience. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to change the way you look at it. You're going to see a holographic image interacting with the band or with the conductor or making mistakes, getting flowers, whatever the case is. It's all in the writing, the script, and the choreography and the production. You know, it's kind of like when a lot of comics do improv. It's not really improv. It's scripted. When I do improv, it's improv, but not those other hacks. Adds Tudor, why do you go to the movies? You're not seeing a live experience. Where else? I go for a hand job from the popcorn bucket. Where else would you get that kind of experience where you're seeing a representation of the artist and hearing their actual voice with live accompaniment? You can't get that at home.
Mm.
So they're trying to get their roster of dead artists to continue to grow. They must secure permission for the art from the artist's estate, as well as the music rights from the record label. So right. That's not going to be cheap.
No.
No point does the actual artist have a say in the matter.
Well, they're dead.
Right. The estate has a say.
Yeah.
What's more, it's not like an audio or video recording that's released after the artist dies. This is something brand new.
Something they've created from their image.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Somebody called it Simon Reynolds called it ghost slavery.
Ooh. Boy, that has a really very negative connotation.
Yeah. At the time of Tupac's Coachella performance, an op-ed in Billboard argued that there exists a token of beauty in letting Pac's music speak for itself and not grafting a false image onto his classic sound simply because we missed Tupac perform when he was alive and went to see him. So that's the ethical argument.
Yeah, of course.
The more checkered the circumstances of an artist's death, the more controversy there is. Their hologram, like Whitney Houston, for example, has been called tacky and exploitive. Dionne Warwick, a legendary singer in her own right, and Houston's cousin flat out called the idea stupid. I called her a place where I live.
Yes.
The Netflix series Black Mirror, ever the barometer for the implications of tech going too far, even weighed in on the topic in its newest season, featuring Miley Cyrus as a pop star whose holograph image goes on tour after she's hospitalized.
Oh. Wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So Tudor is not phased from the criticism. He goes, so this is doing well in Europe. So they did it. They did it in Europe. They want to see how it would react, do it there, and then bring it to the United States. There's a general trend going all the way to the beginning of the opera in Europe. People tend to follow what happens overseas here in their program, and we've seen that with TV shows. If it works in Europe, they'll bring it over here.
Sure,
like The Office.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of BBC or British television has come over here, but
Three's Company was based on Robin's Nest.
Yeah, I mean, so many
All
programs.
In the Family was based on All
Step
in the Family. That was Sam
and
Son was based on Steptoe and Son. All in the Family, I forgot the name of the show, but that was also based on the same show.
Really?
England. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's brought all over. It's very interesting what they're doing here. You know, if they put a show package together, you know, if maybe a 90-minute show, I would go see something like that. You know,
how much would you pay? Would you pay, like, top dollar?
What's top dollar?
All right, say like for a cheap concert ticket now, you're paying $50 to $85 for like bad seats for like most shows.
If it was for the experience, I would pay $90, maybe $100 to see if it was a you know, an artist that I like.
So say it's AC/DC and Brian Johnson isn't in the band and they're doing it with Bon Scott. You know, they're bringing back Bon Scott to give you that experience. You've never seen Bon Scott.
No. In my opinion, would it be AC/DC doing it?
AC/DC's barely doing it now, so many members have died.
But what I'm saying
But you would have like a couple of the members of AC/DC. So you have like two of the, so you have Angus and like the drummer who they brought back who was with them at one point. So you got them, you got a couple of fakes, you got a couple of other people playing that aren't really part of the band, and you got Bon Scott up front.
For some reason, I wouldn't like it that way. I would like it if they did it as a tribute show. With musicians that weren't in the band but doing the music of.
What do you mean?
Focusing. Like, let's say, for example, Bon Scott. And you would say a night with Bon Scott and the music of AC/DC.
You're going to be fucking drunk if it's a night with Bon Scott. He drinks a lot. That's why he
we
died.
Get it.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if you did.
I did. So,
that's unfortunate.
A night with Bon Scott featuring the music of AC/DC. You're going there knowing your expectation is you're going to see the hologram of Bon Scott. You're going to see, you know, hear AC/DC music. And it seems more acceptable than to see actually AC/DC doing it with a hologram of Bon Scott. If AC/DC did this at a show for maybe two tunes or three tunes, that would be cool. It's a tribute to him with AC/DC. But a whole 90 minutes worth of music, I feel, would be cheap. And them trying to push something off, where if it was done as a tribute band doing it,
what about Paul and Ringo going out with George and John?
That's exactly
not
what
that
I
they would not
of.
That they would ever do that,
right?
But you're still getting two original Beatles, but you're getting the band, which none of us ever got to experience,
right?
I mean, I'm willing to. I bet people pay up to $150, $200, $300 to see that.
Yeah, I think that people would pay that.
That they would, and it's between the Beatles and, you know, AC/DC is an iconic classic rock band. The Beatles were just a cultural revolution in a different universe that AC/DC was. So in that situation, I would go see that if Paul and
Ringo.
So
it depends on who the artist is.
It depends who
I think with Whitney Houston, because it's. Because she's such a transcendent talent.
Yeah.
When you think of it, like you think, wow, you're hearing her music again.
Yeah.
I think people would see. I think it really depends who it is. Like Roy Orbison, I don't know how many people are going out to see
there's
Roy
not
Orbison.
Gonna be, yeah, yeah, I don't. There's not, because, yeah, it's nice to do that for a couple of songs. A business model for Roy Orbison wouldn't work because you'd have to base a whole show around it. You just can't do two tunes and take it on the road. You're going to lose your shirt. There's a lot entailed in doing this. So it's got to be packaged correct. They're doing it with Dio, you know, which looks cool, you know.
Are they? That's right. Dio's one of them. Would you go see that?
No.
What about Diddy and Biggie Smalls? I think I think people would go see that.
I think that there are people. I think there is a market for this.
Yeah, I think you have. I think you have to look at it. And go. All right, I'm not really seeing a concert. I'm having an experience.
Yeah,
it's a different thing.
Well, that's what I was. That's and that gets back to what I was saying. Where on the topic of Bon Scott, where I would see that I'm seeing an experience. It's a night with Bon Scott and the music of AC/DC. It's an experience.
I still think you need as many of the originals as you can get. Because I think that's how you justify the high ticket prices. If it's all holograms or people you've never heard of, I'm not paying $90 for that.
Well, you want to know something? I mean, you got bands that are playing at the Westbury Music Fair or small sheds like that that are doing, you know, tribute stuff
right, but,
like that.
But this tech is so expensive and so much to do, it has to
but
put ass in seats.
We're talking about $125 ticket.
So what would you rather see? Queen with hologram Freddie Mercury? Or Queen with Adam Lambert, which I have seen, which is excellent, by the way.
You know, I really would rather see Queen with Adam Lambert.
Really?
Yeah, than see the hologram of Freddie. And not because anything's wrong with Freddie Mercury. That's not my point.
Well, he's dead.
That's wrong with him. I do see the ethical problem with trotting out these representations of people who are dead who don't have the right to say no to have their legacy used this way.
All right, so say when Winwood dies next week.
Oh, God.
Would you go see a Winwood thing? Now, you've seen him a lot of times, but that's a part of your life. But you have a little community.
Yeah.
So, like, if they want to go, I mean, would you guys go?
You know, I mean, part of me, because I've never seen this technology.
See, traffic. They're going to do. They're doing traffic, which you've never seen live.
Well, yes, but not the
original.
Been
requested to play in it originally a few times, but
no. I mean, the question would be because Winwood's still alive, but it would be looking at Chris Wood and Jim Capaldi as holograms. I could just see Chris rolling over in his grave. That I don't think that that's something that he would feel good about, and I would feel bad having seen that.
What
thing
type
done.
Of money would fucking Elvis bring in, or a Frank Sinatra, or if you put Frank and Dean and Jerry and Sammy of Rat Pack show? I mean, think about it.
Well, I think because you know, like,
and Don Rickles too. You could put together. No, seriously, you could do a theater. You could do a residency in Vegas. With that, and make
Here's the difference, okay? You're talking about individual singers. There was no Frank Sinatra band. There was no, you know,
there was a background band.
But it was didn't know. It wasn't like Aerosmith where it was the guys. You know, it was you had Frank.
You're talking
Sinatra.
About Jimmy Crespo and Rick Dufay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The guys.
There shan't be any hologram of them. But
Rocking a Hard Place. It's a good album.
It's a good album. I know. But the thing about it is when you're talking about individual, if you're talking about an iconic band or you're talking about the individual iconic singer that had a backing band but no set band, doing something like that would be monumental and you will get top dollar for that. Just, you know,
I think people would flock to that. I don't know if the Sinatra estate would do it. But I think.
But if he did, I mean, and he would do it for a lot of money. Now, getting back to the question you posed to Pip in regards to whether would I want to see a Freddie Mercury hologram or would I rather see Adam Lambert? Once again, if it's going to be with Queen, I'd rather see Adam Lambert. It's going to be a more animated show. In my eyes, I think that Freddie Mercury would think that Adam Lambert would be the heir to his spot in
Queen. But wait, you say more animated. Remember, they are scripting in crowd work and interactions with the band. It's not a stationary thing. I mean, if they're...
I did see one, and it looked... It kind of... The technology is in its infancy now, and they're just still getting all the logistics worked out of it. But at this juncture, it doesn't look like it's... You know, it looks cool, but... You know, I think at a point during the show, it gets weird.
Yeah, but think about it. Think about how often where we think about a lot of times we are in the cheap seats. Yeah. Well, a lot of times we're watching the whole show
on
on the monitor anyway. Yeah. So it's not it's almost like we're watching it on TV, but with fucking people we don't like around us. So really, how much different is it?
How did you people get into my living room? Oh, I'm not watching television. I'm
right,
in a stadium.
I mean, so it's not like we're always getting that great concert experience anyway.
No, but it really has gone into a creepy land where we're taking people's, you know, talent and their, you know, the experience of them and putting somebody else's will on how their performance would be.
Well, you're probably taking it from, you've probably poured over hours and hours of footage on them and their interactions. Like, you could do Aerosmith with a hologram Joe Perry.
Yeah, but no, let me just take this to a ridiculous example just to
say. This is the place for it.
No, say that now we decided to do this in all kinds of venues. Now we're taking holographic Davin and we're putting words in his mouth as he performs on stage.
I can call people stupid hologram-wise.
No, but say you're now performing a full-on white supremacist set.
Yeah, but the estate obviously is going to negotiate. They're not going to want.
But your estate is a pack of money hungry bastards.
Yeah,
and
but if they ruin the legacy, then the money gets cut off.
I know, but it's like take the money, get the money, and run.
I think you know what I think. You know, a Michael Jackson hologram would do really well.
I'm sure it would. Something makes me think that I've seen that something along those
that
lines might have someplace.
Happened.
But yeah, I think that would be. I think you know, it would be the family, you know, the heirs relinquishing that. You want to know something? If you have, you know, if it's relinquished, done. If you're gone and your image is still performing, I think that would be a good legacy to leave. You know, like I said, an Elvis show would absolutely. You could command. You know. A decent money for that.
I could see Disney taking that over and having that be a performance at Disneyland.
Now think,
or being one of the exhibits.
Also, Vegas, a residency. Yeah, I think the first thing to do, I mean, if I was in on this, I would say the first thing you do is do a residency because basically you don't have to tour. Everything, all the equipment is there.
You set it up.
It doesn't have to be moved. You're there for 4 months.
Yeah.
And all you do is just, you know, do the gig and count the money.
You know who'd be good for this when he's dead? Because he will be eventually. Billy Joel. He doesn't move around that much on stage. No, he doesn't. He doesn't talk to the audience that much. You could script in the storytelling.
It's just the way he said it.
Well,
I know.
Really, I mean, listen, he's not looking great. No. Old Jews don't live forever. Something gets him. No, but I mean, Billy Joel was something because the music is more or less timeless. He's not running around all over the place.
Right. No.
He's not a dynamic front man.
No.
He's got his own charisma,
way.
But you could script it in.
Yeah.
I mean, why couldn't you do that with Billy Joel?
You totally could. Would he have wanted that? Let's pretend Billy Joel has passed on. He's shuffled off his mortal coil, and now he's just a hologram that people are putting words in.
Well, I mean, obviously
it goes
up to each individual. The question is there a demand? Yes, I think there's a demand.
I think there would be a demand.
I think people would say, now, could you charge $200 for Quiet Riot? Probably not.
No.
I mean, as much as I want to see Kevin DeBrow again.
You could charge $200 at a residency in Vegas for a Rat Pack show.
Yes, that's what I said.
And
$200,
that's just to say good evening.
Yeah.
I think it would be up from there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think it would be, and that would be the starting price, you know?
I think that it would be, especially at first, it would be a novelty. Whether it would live on, you know, if people were just like, oh, we're sick of seeing that. Send us new entertainment.
I think if you look at it as a movie type thing.
Yeah.
I think you'll have a good time.
Well, the thing about a novelty, like I said, if they start out, like, for an example, you know, like still the residency in Vegas, if they started out as a novelty, could run that show for 4 months. Or if it gets to the point where, you know, it maybe look like a novelty and not many people are coming as it was in the beginning, your margin and your business model is still there because your overhead is not that much with the exception of the production of the show. There's really no travel. The hotels, you've already worked out a deal with the hotel for the performers and the staff there. You know, so your overhead to do this would be less than doing a tour.
Here's what's interesting.
Yeah, of course.
Here's what's say there's a band that has like a really stubborn lead singer.
Right. Right.
And they want to get together. The lead singer, he doesn't own the rights to any of this, because a lot of lead singers don't.
Yeah.
The record company owns the rights. The bassist has the fucking rights to everything. That happens sometimes. You know, the band wants to go out. The lead singer doesn't want to go. Well, could they hologram him? So look at Skid Row. Say Skid Row's had enough. You know, they go, you know what?
I'll give you a better example. Let's take Led Zeppelin. All right, let's say that, you know, even though Bonham's gone, he still perform, and, you know, Plant can't really sing like that anymore. John Paul Jones and Page would love to play out. Would Plant consent to have a hologram go out, and would people go to pay to see that?
I think people, you know, I think if somebody's still alive and not part of it, there's going to be more anger. That being said, people still see it, because I look at Kiss. I look at Kiss, you know, the two original members are still around doing their own thing. But Kiss is still touring, so people are pissed off. But Kiss is still playing arenas,
right?
So even if Plant didn't give his blessing, some people be, man, that's bullshit. But it would still do well, because people, wow, you know, I'm seeing what it was like in the '70s, but with current Jimmy Page and current John Paul Jones,
yeah,
and Bonham in his fucking heyday, because you know you can take one of his best performances.
I would just as soon see a film of their actual performance.
It's not the same.
No, I get that.
I mean, the music, I mean, you still have Jimmy Page. You still have Jimmy Page playing live. You still have him interacting with Robert Plant.
Right, right. But I don't know. I kind of don't like taking over somebody's legacy and crafting it into something that they didn't actually do. I would just as soon see all of this energy go into, let's see what they actually did, and let's spend some time bringing up new performers that are talented instead of just rehashing and regurgitating the same stuff.
Yeah, nobody cares for that. No, nobody's going to do that.
You know, shit. But
just the way it is.
But still, the thing is, you mentioned people's legacy. I mean, if somebody plays their music and they're not alive, it's still pretty much the same thing in a sense.
Right, but
you know,
what
they wrote
saying
it,
they
sang it, the people are recreating it, or you know.
Recreating their actual performance, fine. But it sounds like what they're doing with this technology is changing it and having somebody else act it out and having them do something that they didn't actually do. You know, that changing it and having them do things that never actually happened.
Well, you have tribute acts.
I don't love.
You have tribute. This is a tribute.
But the thing about having something they never wanted to do, for them to sell this, the hologram has to do what that person would do, because people have a knowledge.
It has to be
in
the spirit of it.
Has a brand, has a spirit of how they performed, how they carried themselves on stage.
Right.
If they deviated after that, the reviews would come in horrible, and now you're losing a lot of audience share, and now you're losing your shirt. So they're going to make sure that the character they have really isn't going to deviate. They're not going to
you can't have Steven Tyler, hologram Steven Tyler, standing in one place. Hologram Steven Tyler has to be running around, being involved with the audience, and being involved with real life Joe Perry. It has to be, you have to suspend disbelief. That's
right.
What you have to do.
I don't
want to
see hologram Frank Sinatra rapping.
You're not.
No, you
wouldn't. Here's the deal. Because nobody would pay to see that. And if somebody had the idea to do it, people would walk out, and that show is done. That show's going to close. So you're basing it on a legacy. The artist is dead. They're not making new music. You're basing it on a legacy. So with that in mind, they're going out to sell that legacy.
And here's the best part.
They're not going to deviate from it.
Here's
the
best part
about it's not really going
to
be there.
About the artist being dead. We don't have to have fucking two piss break songs while they play shit off the new album.
It's true.
Big benefit.
All right. So we are intrigued. We want to see where it goes. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to one of my favorite things. Outstanding displays of spite.
There's one thing that unites the three of us on Davin's Den. It's an outstanding display of spite. In lieu of that, we'd like to introduce Outstanding Displays of Spite.
Yeah, you are a talent. You're amazing. All right. So a dispute over a homeowner using her second property as an Airbnb in the Tony Ocean's Tiny. Why did they have a fucking spelling error?
No, Tony.
Tony.
Tony means kind of...
High class.
High class.
Oh, I've never heard
Snooty.
That.
Snooty.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
The fact that you know it blows my mind. The fact that she knows it doesn't surprise me at all. You. Wow, I guess that's the one for the year.
Oh, wow.
Too much?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's about right. In the Tony, Snooty, Oceanside enclave of Manhattan Beach, California, has escalated into a breathtakingly petty war carried out with shocking pink paint and gigantic emojis. When Catherine Kidd's neighbors report to the city that she was renting a two-level duplex as an Airbnb, she was fined $4,000. Then, in an action she claims was entirely coincidental, Kidd had the house painted bright pink and affixed gigantic emojis to it, including features that her nearest neighbors say are meant to be mocking versions of her. I'm inspired, sort of, by this remarkably spiteful emoji house. The details, as reported last week by Easy Reader News. What is it, like, for five-year-olds?
I don't have no idea what that's about.
Yeah, right? It's going to be this story and a horsey.
I like horses. And, but later, it was picked up by the Los Angeles Times. Don't actually make kids sound all that sympathetic, but they absolutely make her sound determined. Both she and her steaming mad neighbors agree that Kid rented both units in the duplex to long-term renters. After time, she decides she prefers short-term variety. Kid told Easy Reader News she was unaware short-term rentals like Airbnb are illegal in Manhattan Beach. So they complained, and she got fined. Her nearest neighbor, Susan Weiland, tells Easy Reader News that she arrived home one night in June to see that the house had been painted pink and be emojied. It just took my breath away, she said. I just came home and went inside. We still have the shades shut. It's definitely directed at me. Every day I get up, I'm so depressed. I can't look outside. I feel like I'm being bullied, frankly, by her. That word keeps coming up to me. My safe space isn't a safe space. I added that. She's a bully, and she feels she's entitled. She just wants to make things uncomfortable for us. Kid, meanwhile, says the intention of the house was to elevate the mood of the neighborhood. As she puts it, instead of everybody being so gloomy, always so depressed, always in other people's business.
Well, you could feel the twist of the knife on that one, huh?
Yeah, it's like, oh, really?
Kid called the property my happy house. That's what I call my fly.
That's what I call my vagina.
I call it a horror house.
Whorehouse.
Cobwebs.
House.
Creaking.
Hall of terror.
Probably saloon doors down there.
I smell fish varmint.
David, I'm in a vagina. What do you have?
Dag Nabbit, I think the whiskey turned.
Maybe some kind of, I don't know, Sheriff. Something smells kind of fishy in here.
Oh, Pip's pussy.
That's what that creaking noise is.
Hey, look, there's a Volvo. I don't dream of a Swedish car, Sheriff.
Oh, jeez.
Bridge too far.
Yes.
Anybody seen the clitoris? Not in these parts.
Yeah, I didn't hear you talk of that. You barmits better be careful when you go down that uterus. I've always been down there and never come back.
Took a deep dive. Heard they're hanging out by the G-spot. Never been heard from again.
Yeah, sure. No,
legend has it.
Legend has it. Heard tell of that G-spot. Ain't nobody found it yet. But when they do, there's going to be a yelling and a gushing.
You better wear your hip waders if you're going in there, boy.
Fun with Pip.
Yeah. At her expense.
What?
At her expense.
The only way we do it. Oh, God. All right, back to the story.
And a cushion.
Everybody likes a squirter.
Wee!
We're in a Gonzo show. Yeah! That's wet here.
Just film it as
late. Yeah, they all squirt. Three fingers deep. Lost the wristwatch. Anyway. my Timex.
Text a loop, licking, keep on ticking.
Little vagina.
Kit called the property my happy house and said the intention of the pink paint, not pink taint, pink paint, and emojis was to provide cheer in the neighborhood. Like Pip's happy house.
Funny.
Cats like it, people like it, everybody enjoys it.
The whole neighborhood.
Sure, it's fun for the whole family. The artist is a kind of friend of mine, Kit said. Instead of everybody being so gloomy, always so depressed, always in other people's business, I just wanted to send a message to be happy, be colorful, be positive, and enjoy. Everything doesn't have to be gray. It can be full of colors. Life is full of rainbows and Skittles. I get tired of looking at gloomy buildings, so I do something that makes me smile and probably makes someone else smile too. That was my inspiration.
Such a bunch of horseshit.
There's also the curious fact that the emojis aren't exactly found in nature. One has a dangling tongue and a deranged grin. The other a zippered mouth, but both have a gigantic, oddly incongruous eyelashes.
Yes.
Weiland tells Easy Reader News that she also felt the eyelashes were directed at her. She herself had put eyelash extensions put on a short time before the dispute, she told the publication.
You're gonna get a zippered mouth and shut your face. Yeah.
Shut your face, you loon.
I love this woman.
Isn't that great? And the big eyelashes, and she just had eyelash extensions put on. It's like, yeah, that's pretty on the head.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been directly attacked with my eyelash extensions. It's definitely directed. I had them done here in Manhattan Beach, and they did them way too big. Now it's painted on the house.
This woman's a nut. This woman's a nut. I mean,
mental health.
Yeah, mental health. This woman's a nut.
Kate claims not really. Not to really know what Weiland looks like, and to have not commissioned the emojis to resemble her unhappy neighbor. She can think what she wants, but it's not. She's probably paranoid. She has some curious issues, to say the least.
Not for not.
The Los Angeles Times shares the kids' neighbors are concerned that the whole emoji situation could be a slippery slope right into some poop. Carol Madonna, I believe she's a lady, Lady Madonna, who also lived on the street since 1998 and plans to attend Tuesday's council meeting, said the situation could quickly become a slippery slope. Are we talking about Pipsto?
Yeah. Yep.
If the cities continue to cower behind freedom of speech, if the city allows these emojis, she wonders if they would allow some of the more extreme ones. An eggplant on every front porch, such as the poop emoji. No, not the poop emoji.
Can you imagine a house down the street with a gigantic poop emoji?
Easy to find.
It.
It's the shitty house on the corner.
Yeah, it's got the turd in the front.
No, not Joe. It's a real turd.
No, behind him.
A city council meeting on Tuesday night, the Times reports the neighbors plan to renew their calls for the city to force Kid to remove the emojis. Kid, meanwhile, told the Easy Reader News she's not in violation of any laws, called and visited City Hall to make sure her emojification was legal, and is furthermore thinking of painting her own home and another property she owns in a similar style. While this is not inspirational in the classic sense, the emojis, the gigantic waste of time, the clear determination, bum out the name. All right, so we get the gist. I don't know, man. I first of all, I don't like the fact that you get fined for having an Airbnb. I get why somebody wouldn't have it, but it is your own property.
Yeah, but yeah, I the thing is that there's probably been situations in some neighborhoods where they don't want, like, this transient population coming and going out of
the
neighborhood, you know?
I get it.
Especially, you know, if you're rich people, you want to know who your neighbors are, you know?
You know, you're spending that much money on, with the property and the taxes and stuff like that. You don't want a revolving door of people coming in and out, especially if you're living next door to it.
I wouldn't want to live by an Airbnb.
No.
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 I would be upset if my neighbor painted the house bright pink and pooch. Because I look at it like, oh, it's going to drop down property value. Nobody wants to live next to the poop house.
Yeah.
Well, what if there's this giant goofy emoji with, a beard and mustache just like yours staring back at you?
I'd say it's a good looking house.
You want to know something,
that's
though?
That's a handsome emoji.
Never seen such a handsome house.
You know, Manhattan Beach kind of reminds me of Long Beach out in the island. It's very eclectic.
Yeah.
So in an eclectic neighborhood like that, to see a house like that, yeah, it looks cool.
Well, you know, an artsy neighborhood like that.
Yeah, it would look, it's like, all right, we get it. It's kind of cool and stuff like that. In a regular, button-down neighborhood, holy shit, what is this shit?
Well, in town, there's a side of a barn that has a mural. It has, like, firemen, and it used to have, like, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin on it.
What is this?
In town, you go down.
Because that area is kind of eclectic. Then.
No, it's not really eclectic.
Wasn't there James Dean on the side?
Yeah, there's James Dean on it.
Where was this? I remember seeing that.
Yeah,
it's in
here.
My town. It's in Dionne Warwick.
All right.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if I'd want to live next to it. But then again, it's their fucking property. It's so weird.
Right. Well, that's why all these strange town ordinances get drawn up, because somebody tried to do something and everybody else went, oh, crap, I didn't realize you could do that. I don't want to look at that. You buy in a nice neighborhood and all of a sudden it turns out that, your crazy eccentric neighbor, has zebra stripes all over their house and they have flashing red and white lights all night.
You live in a homeowners association. It's like, because in my neighborhood, we have, it's homeowners association, but the buildings aren't connected. Like, here, we have, separate houses, but you're restricted on what you can do. Let's say I decided to
have a grill.
I have a grill.
I know, but I believe you said it's hiding out like Anne Frank.
Yeah. Just a cat. Yeah. That,
just a grill in your attic.
Also, if I decided to build a studio in my garage, when I sell the house, I have to rip that out and put it back to normal. That's part of the deal. All the houses have to look uniform. You know, uniform.
Yep.
If you put a roof on, you have to have it to the color that they want.
Yeah.
The thing, what's good in my sense is, number one, I've always wanted to live in that neighborhood. I've always loved the houses.
Yeah.
So I put a new roof on 2 years ago, and it's fit in exactly what I wanted.
Right.
I'm really never a home. I was like, I want to create a wonderful place. No, I'm on the rope. I'm behind a steering wheel.
Yeah.
Most of the week, you know, so I don't, you know,
I will say this, though. Since the town said that she could have the emojis, if they changed their mind, they should have to pay for it.
What do you mean? Who should have to pay for it?
The town should have to pay for it because they gave her permission to put the emojis up there.
Yeah, they did. So if they went and painted over, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great display spot. I understand why people are pissed off. I like it.
I
like it. All right. Joe, why don't you read this one? I didn't print out the story. This is about Trump Tower. Okay. Unless you have a Pip. One of you guys can read it.
I have it.
All right, Pip, you read here.
More than 330,000 people signed petition to rename Trump Tower Street after Barack Obama. Tens of thousands of people have signed a petition to rename a one-block stretch of Fifth Avenue in New York City after former President Barack Obama. That particular block also happens to be the home of Trump Tower. We request the New York City Mayor and City Council do the same by renaming a block of Fifth Avenue after the former president, whose many accomplishments include saving our nation from the Great Recession, serving two completely scandal-free terms in office, and taking out Osama bin Laden, the mastermind behind September 11th, which killed over 3,000 New Yorkers, creator Elizabeth Rowan wrote. The petition requests that all buildings between 56th and 57th Streets on Fifth Avenue change their addresses. If the campaign is successful, Trump Tower's new address would read 725 President Barack H. Obama Avenue, New York, New York 10022. In May, Los Angeles renamed a stretch of Rodeo Drive in honor of the 44th president, and the creator of the MoveOn.org petition hopes New York will follow. The petition is addressed to Mayor Bill de Blasio and the City Council, and as of Thursday afternoon, more than 330,000 people had signed it. Rowan said she started the petition back in December after seeing a comedian joke about it on Twitter. I thought, that's a great idea, and probably no one is going to do anything about it, so I decided to do it, she's told CBS News on Wednesday. A few news sites picked up on the petition in January, but then it kind of died out, Rowan said. It started to gain traction again after a viral tweet this week from Amanda in Scotland. The tweet says, Trump fact. New Yorkers don't like Trump. They have started a petition to request that stretch of Fifth Avenue between 56th and 59th to be renamed President Barack H. Obama Avenue. If it gets the green light, Trump Tower will have a new address. Poetic justice or what?
All right, make no mistake. This is purely spite.
Oh.
This is spite at its highest level.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think if they decide to do it, it would happen under de Blasio, because de Blasio does not like Donald Trump at all.
True.
I think it really has to – I would make the decision if I was de Blasio in that council. How much money does he owe the city? How many people in my city has he screwed over? Because there's a lot of people he screwed over. If there's a significant amount of people that he screwed over – in Manhattan,
yeah.
You know, contractors and stuff, right. And outstanding taxes, you know, because we know, like, even like for the rallies, he has these rallies, and the town's put up the security and everything, and the Trump campaign's supposed to pay him back. He doesn't pay them back.
Right.
So if he has, like, outstanding if he has outstanding debt, I would do it. If he doesn't, I wouldn't, because you know what? He is the president of the United States, whether you like him or not, it's irrelevant. It's completely disrespectful, but it's so fucking spiteful.
I hadn't even thought about the debt aspect. I mean, I think it's hilarious in its idea. I don't think it's a great idea to do because, you know, we're always renaming things, and this is so spiteful.
This is purely spite. Because if you want to name a street after Barack Obama, there's plenty of streets you can name in New York City.
Sure.
This is the fucking tweak.
Just that section.
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's the beauty of the spite of it. That's what we like it. But again, if Trump doesn't really have a lot of outstanding debt in New York, if he hasn't screwed over that many people in New York, now I think he has, and I think he does.
Yeah.
But if he hasn't, if he's relatively good standing in Manhattan, don't fucking do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
I mean, say what you want about Trump, but he still is a president.
Right.
Fucking douche.
I know. It's like, oh, it's so douchey.
You know, it's quiet about this. Joe, what do you say?
I don't. But boy, this is like, I think we reverse in roles. I mean, Obama was a president.
Yeah, but I know. So you approve for that fucking block.
I can't.
Oh my God, Joe wants to do it. My head's gonna explode.
Yeah, I'm like, this is bullshit. No, I don't.
You're just like Fox News. You're a traitor. I never liked you, Joe. You're not coming to Mar-a-Lago. I thought you were excellent people. You're not. You're the worst. Quite frankly, Joe Curry's a disaster. If you want to talk about the plumbing warehousing industry, Joe Curry's a disaster. Blue Hawk my ass.
Blue Hawk. The green horse, I love that.
Because.
So you're all for it.
I'm not all for it. I'm not all for it. I just think if they do it, you know, it's New York City, it's liberal. What else do you expect? I can't believe this. Blasio was mayor. I can't stand Trump and a liberal, an ultra-liberal city. Of course it's spite. I don't like it.
Well, that's why we're doing it.
But it's like, I don't believe, I'm not going to, what do you expect?
I know, but it's like
Trump will buy another three buildings on the block and throw his fucking name on there. That's what you'll see.
Well,
anyway.
He doesn't own those buildings. He just sells.
But I'm just saying. I'm just saying. You know. But
well, how would Trump react to that? Oh, it would be so worth the Twitter storm just for it to fucking happen. He would lose his shit.
Don't worry, we're buying
Greenland, motherfucker.
You know, there was another president who asked about that, too.
Like,
when you first hear about it, you go, well, that's fucking ridiculous. You go, that's not the first time this came up.
Yeah, it's like, that's kind of like how we ended up with Alaska.
Greenland and portfolio, make it another state. West New Jersey or some shit like that.
West New Jersey.
West New Jersey. Oh, my God.
Need more Jersey. Greenland Shore. I mean, listen, like I said, I think the justification is if he has a lot of fucking debt and there's a lot of contractors in New York, and, you know, we've talked about this before, there are people he screwed, I would fucking go full steam ahead with, go, fuck you, motherfucker. We're not going to ever get that money back, but you have to live with this.
Yeah.
You have to live with your pride and joy in the city where you're from going, fuck you, and there's not a damn thing you could do. All you can do is move. That's all you can do.
He would get insane every time he had to, like, write a letter out or, like, see a mailing go out from his office or whatever in Trump Tower.
He would claim Trump Towers in Kenya.
Yeah.
I don't, he's another president.
I know.
It doesn't have to be that little block, Joe.
That section of block.
There's plenty of nice blocks you could get for President Obama. It doesn't have to be right there.
There are a lot of streets in New York.
I know. It's a pissing contest. But,
oh,
you know,
this is the ultimate fuck you. I'll see your emojis and give you a Barack Hussein Obama.
But I don't think it's an all hands on deck thing. Let him name the fucking street.
Oh, I hope they do, just for the show.
Yeah. I'll see your tweet and I'll raise you street.
There you go. So I thought we had two very good, outstanding displays of spite this week.
Lovely.
All right, we'll do some drunks in the news.
Welcome to Drunks in the News.
This week's Benjamin Franklin drinking term, curved. If you drunk too much, you're curved.
Well, to the left or the right?
I don't know.
It's probably because you're hunched over.
Oh,
you're drunk, you're having trouble getting your balance. So it's, you know, and you're hanging over. You know, because when you call, you're trying to, like, you know, lower your head to get the blood back in. So it's probably you're curved.
I like it.
Right.
I like there you go. It.
Noted.
Last week, a waitress revealed that she had sneakily switched the drink order of a customer at the restaurant she worked in. After overhearing a conversation between the customer and her friends, the waitress understood her to be pregnant. And after serving her one this happened in England, by the way. And after serving her one alcoholic cocktail, decided to ask the bartender to make the rest of her drinks virgin. At the end of the night, the woman was furious to discover what happened and demanded her tip be repaid. The waitress who was told she could be fired for discrimination thought what she was doing was for the best, but it wasn't actually legal. Lorna Mason, a legal advisor at DAS Law, takes a look at what the law actually has to say about the situation. Again, this is in England. Can a serving staff legally refuse to serve alcohol to a customer? Any premise that requires a license to serve alcohol has the ability to refuse service, and it is up to the licensee to accept or refuse a patron's custom, explains Lorna. However, under discrimination laws in the UK, it's unlawful to discriminate in providing goods or services to a patron on grounds of race, disability, gender, sexual orientation, or religion. I don't think we're calling pregnancy a disability.
An orientation. Like, which of those categories does this fall under?
I don't think it falls under any of it, to be honest.
It's not a disability.
Keep reading. Yes, because they're kind of addressing that as you go.
Wow. I should have read ahead. Under the Consumer Rights Act of 2015, goods should be as described, says Lorna. If the cocktail was advertised as including alcohol, then contractually the customer should have been served the alcoholic cocktail. If the customer is charged the same price for a non-alcoholic cocktail, then the customer could argue that she should be entitled to a refund for the difference. However, if the customer paid a reduced price and therefore did not suffer any financial loss, then the customer is unlikely to be able to pursue a breach of contract claim. Finally, Lorna looks at whether the unborn baby itself has any rights.
Stop right there. Now, that's why...
Okay,
that's
Meatloaf.
Dun, 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 dun. Basically, it goes back to when you were reading the other stuff. It's like grounds of race, disability, gender, sexual orientation, or religion. She stopped it basically in protection of the unborn baby. Now, right here, they're saying, look whether the unborn baby has any rights. Sadly, it doesn't look like they do. On the right, she did that in the safety of the unborn baby. Is there a law protecting the unborn baby where she would refuse it on that ground? That's where the linchpin of this whole story
sure.
is, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I'm concerned about the unborn baby. So in the sense is, if the woman was intoxicated and got cut off, The bartender is concerned about the safety of somebody that might get hit by her, or if she was driving or something like that, that might get hurt by her in a vehicle or in some other circumstance. So the way I see it, it's the potential for harm to be done to somebody else due to their
but then that would depend on how far along pregnant. If she's not showing, say she's 1 month, then you go, well, is it really a person yet? Then you start going down that road.
But that's where that the whole thing comes in, because basically they're saying it. Well, you know, you're discriminating and blah blah blah. But that's not really the issue in this story.
Well, kind of, because I understand the underpinnings of prenatal alcohol.
Look at you.
You know. But
that one hit late for Pip.
That's part of the problem. It took me a while. I'm like, what is he saying?
There's wheels on the bus. Go, hey!
Now we're making fun of the disabled, and it's just wrong. Now I feel bad about it.
Yeah, it's like, you're not supposed to talk about my disability. But the thing is,
I'm treating you like an equal.
Now, where do we stop regulating or other people deciding what this pregnant woman can and cannot do?
Hey, you know what? I'm fine with the restaurant saying you're not having go. You know what? This is our decision. Now, I'm not fine with them charging her full price.
No.
I don't think they should have lied to her. I think they should have just said,
correct.
Listen, we're uncomfortable.
Correct.
We heard you're pregnant.
Correct.
You can either leave, but we're not going to serve you alcohol.
Correct.
This is our establishment. This is how we feel.
Right. Correct. That's the way they should have handled that.
That's what they should have done.
That's the way they should have handled that. Well, you know, I mean, the woman has the option of drinking a non-alcoholic beverage or leaving the premises. But
so the question is, should it be illegal to knowingly give a pregnant person?
How are you supposed to recommend?
Well, I'll tell you
that.
What. I've done comedy clubs. I've been in comedy clubs where very visible women are drinking booze.
You want to know something? I made that mistake, not with booze, but assuming
somebody
was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
They're not. So, you know what?
Yeah, but you're a moron.
Well, you're not exactly, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed yourself. So it's
with
like,
this motley crew, I'm a fucking switchblade.
So you don't know. You know, you don't. You're making a. In that instance, if you don't know, you're actually making a generalization.
Well, I mean, I think they should make it illegal to serve a person that you know is pregnant.
They should. I don't, you know, or is the discretion of the establishment? And to tell you the truth, any establishment has the discretion to serve or not serve you if they feel that there might be harm if you do.
It's uncomfortable when I see like a pregnant audience member drinking.
Yeah.
Because it bothers me.
Yeah, it would bother me as well.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm in the middle of this fucking show. What do I do? I haven't seen it in a while. I used to see it sometimes in the
give
city.
drinking a lot, or like drinking like a little bit of a glass of wine, yeah. Or like, what are we talking about?
Give him the name of a good carpenter to build a ramp. But that's what
you oh, man.
Because they're going to be disabled because they're drinking and stuff.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Moving along. Many people think that if you're under 21, you're forbidden from drinking beer. Well, that's not the case where I live.
Woo-hoo.
It turns out that the alcohol laws in New York are a bit more complicated than most people realize. While everyone agrees that kids shouldn't be bailing up at the local bar, lawmakers in New York think what happens in your own home is your own business. Really? I didn't think so for Mr. Epstein. The Washington Post reports that there are at least 37 states across the country that have the same sort of exception when it comes to underage drinking. New York's actual law is very different from what the Liquor Authority actually advertises. Web searches for New York's drinking laws turn up definitive statements such as, if you're under 21 years old, it is a violation of the law to possess alcohol with intent to consume. The real law, however, reads differently. A look at New York's actual beverage control shows that the state is actually more concerned with what happens at bars and restaurants. When it comes to drinking at home, there's a pretty big exception for kids who are given alcohol by their parents. A person under the age of 21 years may possess any alcoholic beverage with intent to consume if the alcoholic beverage is given to the person under 21 years of age by that person's parent or guardian. It turns out that it's perfectly legal for a parent to serve their kid a pint of beer at dinner. But whether that's a smart idea or not is totally a different issue. While the act of serving your child alcohol isn't enough to get you arrested, it can be seen as endangerment and lead to all sorts of other legal issues that could land you in trouble. So it's legal for your kids to drink, but it's still a bad idea because it can have problems. I think it should be legal to give your kids booze at home.
I do too.
They're my kids. I'll ruin them if I want to. Now, don't get your kids shit-faced.
No, but I like tipsy toddlers. You should see the joke, the eyeball that Joe is giving me.
I know what bar in England you can go to.
But yeah, that's a good, like, what? All right, maybe, you know what, maybe 15 and older?
No, I mean, you know, like, I remember very well going to the Burley's house.
The Burley's house.
The Burley's.
Always a problem with
that. Yeah, I've never lied. The Burley's, they're a little too fucking loose with the rules, to be honest with you.
It's Burley.
You don't know. You were drunk. We know.
Yeah, well, you know, I could have been because I went over there for dinner.
Yeah, Burley, that's how she was reading a mailbox because she was drunk.
The Burley's used to have, like, about it.
Yeah, <don't>.
The Burley's used to have, like, about an inch worth of red wine, the kids, with dinner. I didn't see.
All right, but that's different. See, that's different. That's not your parents' house. Because when you would go over there, you're not their kid.
Yeah, but I only went over there once, and I saw the kids drink it.
Oh, they didn't give it to you?
No.
Okay.
No, and I'm sure
my parents used to give me like liqueur and schnapps when I was like a little fucking kid. I was the only one drinking in the house, by the way. They had this whole cabinet, and it'd be like on the Sabbath, you know, having a little Sabbath lunch, a little Shabbos lunch, a little brisket, a little kugel, ready to go. And there I am, you know, a little prayer over the grape juice, and I'm fucking drinking like peach schnapps or chocolate liqueur.
Maybe in a sense that's maybe why they had that, do it a religious thing. Do the,
My parents don't drink.
Settle down, kid.
My parents, I was the only one drinking. They were giving a kid. But you know what? I think it's better that it wasn't this taboo thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's not a big deal. We just had the conversation, you know, with the wife and, you know, when we were in Maryland, Ocean City, we did a ghost walk and the kid was drinking some Kahlua and cream and fucking loved it. And she was like 10 or she was like 8. So talk about bad parenting. And then when we went to Cuba a couple years ago, my daughter had a mojito and loved it. And then, like, the other day we're talking about, I told my daughter.
And we were doing shots of Jack Daniels last night over at Hopscotch.
And my kid loved it.
That's a little put hair on her chest. But I don't know what it came up to. I said something like, oh, if I get a mojito, I'll give you some of mine.
Yeah.
And also on the wife, because she's hanging out with her mom and everything. She always bows up when she's fucking hanging out with her mom.
Oh.
I have to lower my voice. I was like, no, we're not going to do that. But we already did that. But it was a different country. What's that make a difference?
I'm just thinking about what he said. You want to hear steps. What did you say, motherfucker?
I know.
Fucking killed him in tandem.
We've all been there. All right, yeah.
I'm keeping my head down.
Yeah. He's mouthy, but he's not stupid.
Well, he is, but not. He doesn't have a death wish. But yeah, I mean, you know what? I think, like, I'm not going to get my kid shit, but if she's going to drink, let it be with me.
Yeah.
Where I'm monitoring this stuff.
Right.
Because I said something like, you know, something like acknowledging the fact that if she goes away to school, she's probably going to drink before she's 21. And again, from the two of them, I got like an attitude. I go, no, I'm just fucking realistic.
Yeah.
I was in college. I was away. You join sororities, you join clubs, you hang out with older people so you get booze.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you I want you to be shit-faced,
right.
But I acknowledge what's going on. I want you to know that if something goes on, if you're drunk, you can call me.
But it takes a... That, I mean, that's really good.
And I agree. I am exceptional.
But it also takes a lot of the myth and the naughtiness out of it.
Yes. It's not all, if fucking lame-ass dad is allowing it to happen, how cool can it possibly be?
Exactly. And that's what happened in my house. My dad allowed me to have beer in the house. He would buy beer for me and my teenage best friend. We would sit on the front porch and drink it. And it's like we weren't getting toasted, but we weren't going out and, like, driving around looking for booze and getting, like, you know, drunk and crashing into trees and shit.
No, you were diking out upstairs in your room. I understand.
Listen up, for
you. A little scissor action when we weren't doing arts and crafts.
Hey, what else is new?
Before that happy house, you know, had creaking doors. It was open for business.
That's when it was smooth sailing.
Yeah, smooth sailing. No cobwebs. Quite inviting. Plush and new.
Plush. It was plush.
What, you look confused.
Because I am.
He's trying to picture it being plush.
Well, it can happen. It wasn't always used in rundown.
Well, yeah. You know.
It wasn't always a ghost town.
I wasn't allowed to drink in the house.
Okay.
You and
know,
now
I mean,
look
when
at
I was
you.
A kid, funny. But, you know, when I was 16, I used to go out, we'd get the little Miller beers and stuff like that and drink that, you know.
Yeah.
And be in the woods drinking and stuff like that. But it was... It's weird that I knew that I had to have sort of a responsibility to it,
right?
Because it wasn't acceptable at home,
mm-hmm.
You know. Where I, you know, because if I knew if I came home drunk because it wasn't acceptable at home, there would be ramifications for that until I was of age,
right?
You know, and look, when I was, you know, old enough to drink and have a beer, I mean, I used to take my mom out for her birthday. I'd go to the restaurant and she'd have a couple of Manhattans and just crack me up because Nettie was a pisser, you know. But you know, I feel, and like he said, you know, you look confused and I'm like, I'm very on the fence on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very on the fence on
smart.
This. Very well, not if it has a topper.
No, okay.
Cedar top.
I forgot I'm dealing with an expert. I apologize.
Thank you. Sure. But so, you know, I feel from a respect of alcohol that maybe until you are of legal age, maybe you'll have a little sip at a holiday or something like that. But drinking at in the house is not acceptable until you're legal age. Where you go out and you rebel, you know that you're going to try to be responsible because in the eyes of the parent, the eyes of the person, the parent, that it isn't acceptable. And if you come home drunk or you, it's not going to be tolerated.
Here's the thing about booze, especially when you're younger.
I love it.
Yes. But here's the thing about booze, especially when you're younger. It really doesn't taste that good.
When you're young, no.
It doesn't taste good.
No, I remember.
So I'd rather. This beer, this is disgusting.
I know.
Good, you don't want it. Yeah. Perfect.
Oh, no. I really love Budweiser.
Well, you're Irish and cheap.
Yes. But I remember very well. My dad was, as a side job, he did landscaping. And I remember.
I didn't know you were Mexican.
Guatemalan. Shut your mouth.
So, Joe, you'll see her out.
First we check her papers. Don't, you know, we don't respect.
Well, look at you.
We have to vet her.
Turn her upside down. See if she's been spayed or neutered.
Oh, open up the swinging saloon doors. What are you looking at, varmint? We're American. Okay, just checking. See, I said, is that a sombrero down there? Get.
Get ice
I didn't know
in
you were smuggling Guatemalans in with that thing.
As many
yeah,
as I can fit.
Yeah, sombrero in there. Get out there,
Joe,
hombre.
Joe, go to the freezer and get ice. We need there's to have this situation taken
care of. There's some bad hombres in Pip's vagina.
Terrible vagina. I've seen a lot of vaginas. The best vaginas. This is the worst vagina. Quite frankly, this vagina is a disgrace. It's a disaster, people. A
lot of bad hombres down there.
They're sending their worst. They're smelly. They're yeasty.
They're tampons. They're not...
It's a bloody mess. Yeah. Oh, I'd God. Still raw dog it because I'm Donald Trump.
Ew. That's gross. But my dad was a landscaper, and I remember very clearly standing up between the front seats in my dad's Volkswagen van and taking the last little sips out of his Budweiser and like throwing it back to get the last drops.
So he's drinking and driving.
And my dad going, "Oh crap!" Because there was a cop.
Oh, what a shining example of parenting.
It's like, oh, my 4-year-old is slugging back a bud.
Jesus
standing.
Let me tell I think you. It's a little much. I think that's a little much.
Let me tell you something.
Welcome to my life.
I remember one time I was over at my aunt's house and my uncle goes, "You want to drink?" I go, "Little Sambuca." And I'm like, sure, Uncle Fred, sure, why not? You know, and he gives me and I, you know, at that time, I'm like 16, pumpkin, I'm drinking whiskey in the woods. Sure, I'll drink Sambuca.
Yeah, I know.
Holy smokes.
But that's good. You don't give him the fruity shit.
No. That's Sambuca, you know, because Italian drink, you know, you throw some cloves in there. And sometimes we'll have it, you know.
A little Rumplemintz, a little Goldschlager. Yeah. Light them up a little
bit. It's like almost like an aperitif. You know, you have it like after dinner and stuff like that. You know, you just, you know. You drink it as a kid.
It's very syrupy. That'll make you sick as a dog.
Right,
you drink
too
much of that.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the kid, depends on the situation and all.
I think that in your scenario, Joe, it was because of your respect to Nettie. It wasn't necessarily because of you wanting to, like, rebel but not too much. I think that every kid wants to rebel a bit, but you didn't go overboard because you respected her.
Yeah, that was the kind, you know, the kind of thing where there was, repercussions when I walked out of that house. I mean, I was told that if I ever wound up in jail, she had to come, she would kill me.
Oh, yeah.
And then I said, right. And she said, I don't know what you're smiling at. Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm like, she was dead set. You know, and I also had the thing, the woman, you know, the woman worked, commuted to the city an hour and a half every day, worked like an animal, came home. And I understood she was trying to keep a roof over her head. So the last thing I really wanted to do was make trouble. You know, I got it. You know, so when it came to that stuff, believe me, there was one time I got carted in and I was able to pull it off. But, for the most part, I really, I was pretty cool with alcohol. And, to this day, I'm very weird with alcohol in the sense where if I'm hanging out at the compound, it's game on.
Yeah.
Okay. If I go to a, if I'm
it's
playing.
It's not the fucking LA Coliseum, you know.
I understand. But I walk around with like two buds and a shot, shot filled of whiskey, And one night my buddy goes, "Man, you could still party." I'm like, "Slow down." Okay. my biggest partying, to tell you the truth, on a normal week is like, is if I'm at the club, I'll have maybe two drinks at the club.
Yeah.
And a shot, maybe. That's the woohoo time. But still, I don't, if I play in the band, I will have a beer before I go up.
Uh-huh.
And I'll bring up maybe one or two with me, depending how long the set is, because I need to be loose. If I'm doing stand-up, I don't drink before I go up. I'll have a drink after.
Right.
If I'm with my family, I usually don't have a drink. The only time I really drank in front of my family was actually we went out for drinks a couple of weeks ago, Saturday after the funeral. Mm-hmm. And it was with my nephews and nieces. I had a couple of beers and a couple of shots, because it was on one time. But I'm very weird. If I have a business dinner, we go out, we're taking customers out to dinner or my regionals in town. We go, I don't drink. I'm very selective when I drink. Because I want to be in control. I want my wits about me.
Let's take our final break. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll do some Ann Jackson.